Welcome, one and all, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you go friggin' nuts. We're broadcasting live on the miraculous AmericanFreedomRadio.com from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's even Fukushima irradiated, which has been good for the economy because everybody's managed to snap up a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. Today, we have a very special guest. You know how every show I say, ladies and gentlemen, we have a very special guest today. It's because it's, if you notice, everybody's very special. Everybody's got a story of some description. And I find that if you start listening to everybody, you gain something that the mainstream media very rarely gives you, a thing called perspective. Rather, they'd keep you tunnel-visioned and not listening to all different sorts of conversations, and rather just directed in one particular fashion, whereas this show, we can go anywhere. All right? This is American Freedom Radio, okay? No taboo topics, and we mean it when we say it. My very special guest today is an author. She's a radio show host, has been doing podcasting for 13 years, and she's even a Reiki practitioner. This is a healing technique that involves lots of leaves, so I hear. But Reiki with the leaves. And anyway, her name is Maria Heller from Maria.net, and that's M-E-R-I-A, all right, Maria.net. Maria, welcome to the program.
It's my pleasure to be here. Big hello to my fans in New Zealand and Australia and everywhere else.
So you've been doing podcasting for an ominous amount of years, so 13. Well, what got you started doing that and writing your books and all of these things that you do?
Well, you know, I was an environmentalist most of my life, I still am, and a spiritual teacher, teaching Native American spirituality, the medicine wheel, Reiki, which is a hands-on healing technique. But I also had done some radio, terrestrial radio, out of Phoenix, Arizona. And way back in 2000, a young man, probably not any older than you, came up to me and asked me if I'd like to do internet radio. He wanted to start an internet radio station. And that was in the year 2000, when most people didn't even have speakers on their computer. So I said to him, well, it sounds like it would be fun. I'll try it for a couple of months. And it's 13 years later, and I'm still doing it 4 or 5 days a week.
And you've got quite an enormous array of guests there. I mean, just say the ones that I managed to take a glance at was the David Icke and Dr. Andrew Wakefield. So it appears that you're not kind of batting around doing nothing. You really are talking with some of the most important thinkers of our time.
Absolutely. Well, you know, David Icke is one of my regular co-hosts. I have six. One is an economist, Joe Myers. Another is an astrologer, Joe Anthony. I have Dave McGowan, who we will be delving into this latest program shooting in Connecticut. His expertise is Programmed to Kill. And Richard Grove, I don't know if you're familiar with Richard, but he's a co-host as well. And I know I'm leaving somebody out. Professor Jim Fetzer. So we talk about everything from assassinations to chemtrails to the lies our media tells us to the illegal wars that America is trapped in, the dangers of vaccines. I give a voice to the people that mainstream media in the United States will never allow a voice to. And people seem to like it.
Well, have you ever noticed that whenever you tell somebody, don't look at that, don't think about pink elephants, don't think about the color red, that's all they can think about. So the government tells you, no, stop talking about that. Stop thinking about these particular things. It's all people ever want to talk and think about.
Right. Absolutely. And well, that's the way to get people to notice chemtrails. If you don't tell them to look up, they'll never notice it. But if you just stand there kind of, you know, just gazing at the sky, eventually they'll say, what are you looking at? And you'll say, what are those? And it opens up a conversation.
Yeah. Or sometimes, in my case, I was outside my house. A friend had just given me a quick ring on the phone and said, Vinny, there's a massive chemtrail over the whole city. It was like clear blue sky and one giant, obvious clear strain chemtrail. So I'm out there at the front of the house with the camera shooting up, and this flatmate comes out of the house that lives above us, and she goes, oh, how are you doing today? And I was like, look at the sky. And she's like, yeah, it's really pretty, isn't it?
People don't notice anything until you slap them in the face with it. You know, there's the story that when the invaders first came to America, the Native Americans didn't see the ships because they didn't exist in their reality. So as huge as those boats were, the natives did not see them because it wasn't part of their reality. So I think that for a lot of people, they don't see the chemtrails because it's not part of their reality. But what I find is as soon as I point them out to someone, they never miss them again. So it's really our job to just wake people up and say, you know, open your eyes and take a look around and see what's going on this planet.
Have you ever noticed as soon as you expose one particular method of the enemy, they come up with all new methods that are usually just exactly the same as the old ones, just under different names?
Well, you know, here in the United States, and I mean, I do cover the world news, but mostly, of course, the United States. And here they use the same MO, modus operandi, every time because people fall for it. So why would they change it? You know, we just had a terrible shooting. I'm sure you heard about it in New Zealand. And it again went from three shooters to a lone gunman. I mean, we have pushed the lone gunman theory to death in this country since Lee Harvey Oswald and since John Wilkes Booth. We might as well go all the way back to the murder of Abe Lincoln. You know, and if people want to believe that that was just one single crazy person, they don't know history.
They don't know that history is not pocketed by just a few crazy people. It's actually almost a cauldron of huge quantities of powerful, crazy people.
Right. But, you know, when you trace back, even if you go all the way back to Abraham Lincoln, it was the same people in control of the world then that are now. And, you know, I'm talking about, I'm sure you know, the Rothschild family, you know, and they still own all the money in the world and they still control everything behind the scenes.
Yeah. I mean, have the Rothschilds been thrown out of their massive mansions?
No, of course not.
Have they been stripped of their gargantuan land holdings or bank shares?
All these banks that got busted, you know, HSBC, and you have, you know, all these other ones. All they have to do is pay a fine. Nobody ever goes to jail. You know, but here in the United States, if you steal, you know, if you steal, I read a story of a young woman who stole somebody's cell phone. She was 18 years old. They kept her in jail for 51 days because she couldn't pay the ticket to get out of jail. She was too poor to pay the $200.
I wonder how much they paid the private prison contractors in order to incarcerate her for those 51 days. I think probably a lot more than $50.
Yeah, lots more. You know, the average price, so they'll admit to in the United States, of keeping someone incarcerated is $135 a day. Now, for $135 a day, you could stay at a really nice hotel and maybe actually rehabilitate instead of, you know, our prisons here, which make Abu Ghraib look mild. You know, people think our prisons overseas are just a horror. They have no idea that they're the same here at home.
Well, I've always got this fear of going to prison. You know, I've been arrested before, and the horrible thing is just the feeling of being in handcuffs and being locked in a room with no clock. Our time seems to drag on. Sort of thing, just kind of stress just wells up in your mind. And I was thinking to myself, you know what? This isn't helping me not want to become a further criminal. You know, this is actually making me angrier, and this is making me more frustrated, and I've got nobody to talk to help me through this tough time. I'm going to come out almost a worse person. And sure enough, as soon as I was arrested, I came out and I started doing illegal activity right away.
Of course, if you're not a criminal before you go in, you certainly will get the education while you're in there. But, you know, it's interesting you brought that up, Vinny, because most people don't realize they are in a prison. You know, we're in a prison every day. Just because you can't see the walls doesn't mean that you're not in a prison. You know, and I remember when I interviewed Howard Zinn and we were talking about Palestine, and he referred to Palestine as an open air prison. But here, you know, in the United States, or where you are, you know, with this whole fear, one world order fear thing going on around the planet, they can't put you in prison. Even if they put your physical body in there, they can't lock up your mind unless you allow it. So you can stay free in here. They can't touch inside you. So that's just something to keep in mind.
Well, it depends how strong you really are. I mean, because even the highest paid operatives, with given the right amount of torture, will give up secrets. And it seems to me that the whole process of torture in order to get people to confess things or whatever, and I'm sure you must have seen many, many videos of police brutality, how they set people up and just lie through their teeth and stuff like that in order to get a conviction. You know, it's like in warfare, the reason why you torture your people is not in any way, shape or form to really get information out of them. It's actually to scare other people who would rise against you, thinking, man, I might get tortured to death like this poor person.
Well, yeah, I mean, under torture, who wouldn't admit to anything, you know? I mean, that's just the truth of it. If somebody said I had to sit back and listen to Rush Limbaugh talk for an hour, I'd probably spill all kinds of state secrets instead of having to do that. But I want you to know, years ago, there was a little man. He's not a physically big guy. His name is Mordecai Vanunu. I don't know if you've heard of him. Have you?
No.
Mordecai Vanunu was a man in Israel who told the truth about Israel's nuclear weapons at their plant in Dimona in Israel. They put him in jail for 20 plus years, most of it in solitary. As soon as he came out, I was lucky enough to get him on my show. And he said to me that he wasn't in prison. He said, because he never allowed them to control his mind. In his mind, he was always free. So there's a big lesson there, especially if you're familiar with David Icke's work, and you will really understand that we live in an illusion, and they can only control us by our participation, but they can't control your mind unless you hand it to them.
That's what submission and domestication is really all about. They seem to have become adept at it. But it's like some people are very similar to a horse you can't break.
Well, yeah, especially if they happen to be Italian, which I happen to be. Maybe this case is that they're just born that way. I told you before we got started that I'm suspended from Facebook again. At my age, getting a suspension is like getting kicked out of school in the fifth grade. I've had, you know, CIA interference. And, you know, I've done my show for so long. So many things, death threats, this, that, and the other. Any other normal woman, probably, especially a woman, probably would have given up a long time ago. But it's not my nature to do that. To me, every time I get attacked means I have to be doing something right. If I'm able to piss off these big shots, then I must be doing something right. So for me, it's a game. I want to continue playing.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, are you playing to win or playing to get a draw? You know, because sometimes a draw would be quite nice if they would surrender and we'd leave them in their mansions and stuff like that, but get their hands off the pharmaceutical companies and the Dow Chemical and all of these other massive evil corporations that could be really good for people if they weren't run by sociopathic criminal scum. Right. You know. Under new management. I'm sorry, Mr. Rothschild. I'm sorry, Mr. Rockefeller. All your managers that you've appointed, all these directives that you've given, they have increased your business, but they've actually really killed people and destroyed the earth. So you're fired.
Well,
you can go back and you can live. You can live in Rockefeller Plaza. You can live in Rothschild Manor outside of London. Go for your life. You can enjoy all that gold stuff. We're not going to kill you. We're not going to assassinate you or any stuff like that. Just live your life of luxury. But stop trying to destroy the world.
Well, you're a much nicer person than I am, because I'd like to see them in all these FEMA camps that they've built throughout the United States to lock up dissidents. That's where I want to see the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, the Bushes, all the criminals. They all belong in a prison of their own making.
They do. But I doubt they'd go voluntarily, and I'm sure they've got heaps of crazy psychopaths in uniform that work for them that would prevent them from going there.
Yeah, but you know what? We got numbers on our side. If you really think about it, there are close to 7 billion people on this earth now being ruled by approximately 40,000. Does that give you any ideas? I mean, of the size numbers we have, you know, they can't kill everybody, okay? They just can't.
Technically, Israel alone with its 300 nukes could, if they really wanted to.
They only have 300. You know, Russia's got 6,000. The United States, we don't even count how many we have. So unless they want to blow them.
Hold on, Maria. We'll come to break here. We'll talk about blowing up the world just after we come back, ladies and gentlemen, in just a few minutes on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Very special guest, Maria Heller, MERIA.net, Maria.net. We'll be right back. Back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My very special guest, Maria Heller, MERIA, Maria.net. Welcome back. Now, we were talking about how long you've been doing your archives, and the point is you don't do live shows anymore because you keep getting hacked and too stressed out by it while you're live on air.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I obviously must be like public enemy number one, and I would get hacked all the time. You know, right after 9/11, right before they passed the Patriot Act, my show was pretty much shut down midway while I was doing one of the early 9/11 interviews proving that it was a false flag. And at that time, they had to reroute my show through China, back through Canada, which created an 11-minute delay in my show. But now with the Patriot Act, they can just come in and hack you right off the air without having to worry about breaking the law. So my show got hacked a lot. I mean, just a whole world of problems. And I just decided to pre-record all my shows because it was way too stressful. So I actually
Hold on a second.
Yeah.
Are you saying that there's actually a clause in the Patriot Act that allows the government to hack live radio shows?
They have total freedom to do whatever they want. It's all warrantless now. They can do whatever they want. Back in the day when I started, they couldn't just interfere with your show because the Patriot Act hadn't been passed yet. People have no idea how many laws have been passed and how little freedom we have. You know, you got FISA, you got NDAA, you got the Patriot Act, you have, you know, all these named other acts. You know, Jesse Ventura's got a great book out on 13 documents everybody needs to know, uncovering all this. And now, you know, they're going to have spyware on the buses, public transportation, recording your audio conversations. I mean, we've become a total police state. And the only thing keeping us from getting even worse, you know, total fascist tyranny, is the fact that we have the Second Amendment, which I know they want to get rid of, which I think is why we've had so many multiple shootings in 1 week in the United States. The first thing everybody started screaming was, we have to do something about the gun laws. You know, the UN wants to disarm the whole planet. So, you know, this feeds right into the UN's agenda, which is the One World Order agenda, because I don't know, you know, about New Zealand, but I know what happened to Australia after they lost their guns, and no different than what happened in Britain when their guns were confiscated. And let's not leave out Hitler, okay? So, you know,
let's not leave out Stalin or China or Cambodia or Scotland under Edward the Longshanks or the Irish or any culture in the entirety of history that has been disarmed has gotten exterminated or enslaved. Every single one.
And now they want to do that here in America, which always makes me question whenever any of these shootings happen, because our government is not beneath killing its own people. History has proven they've killed and experimented on all of us forever. Yes, it's a tragedy. I feel sorry for the children. But you know what? We're killing children all over the world with our illegal wars, with our drones, with our landmines, with our vaccines. Nobody's crying for those children. So if our governments don't lead by example, what do they expect except for people to emulate what they do?
Well, I also want to constantly remind the current servants and the jack boots and the black masks and all of that kind of things who think that they're going to be gods in this new society that they're building. No, mate, you'll be sent to meet them, you know. Every single time tyrants come to power, they kill the people that help them get up there because they're the only ones who can bring them down from the inside. They're too much of a threat to leave them alive. Kind of like in a conspiracy, you tie up all loose ends.
Exactly. So all people have to do is take an attitude of non-participation. What if they, you know, years ago in the 60s, probably before you were born, there used to be an expression, what if they threw a war and nobody showed up? You know, if these old disgusting men had to fight their own war, there would be no war. If they had to send their own children to war, there would be no war. So I'm all for taking world leaders and putting them in a boxing ring and let them beat each other to death, and whoever wins, wins. Okay?
Well, we came up with a concept similar to that on another show. We called it the Banker Games.
Oh, the banker games. I like that. I might be stealing that one from you.
You know?
Well, interesting you mentioned that because this shooting that happened in Sandy Hook was also connected to the Hunger Games because the woman that wrote the Hunger Games lives there. Is that a coincidence? And let's not leave out that Connecticut has the strongest gun laws in the country. So by them making all their schools and daycare centers gun-free zones, they really opened up those people to be sitting ducks. Because if everybody was armed and knew how to use their arms, all the gun violence would be over in this country. Because nobody with a gun is going up against somebody else with a gun. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, I've talked to some old guys from Texas and other states in the United States, they used to take their guns to school. You know, right. Nobody ever got shot.
Of course not. You know, Arizona, I live in Arizona, and it's an open carry state. So you can walk around with your gun on your hip. And I guarantee you, nobody's going to get in your way when you're wearing a gun. Nobody's coming at you with a gun. But in this country, because most people are ignorant of why we even have the Second Amendment, which was put in place for us to keep our government from becoming tyrannical, which it now is very close to being, I'd say 90%. But they don't understand that if they take the guns away from the innocent people, the good people, then only criminals are going to have guns. So, and when we have a government, I don't know if you heard of the big scandal that we sold guns to Mexican drug cartels. That goes all the way up to the top of the administration. Nobody wants to talk about that story anymore.
But hold on. What did the Mexican drug cartels pay for these guns with?
Well, with drugs, of course. Hey, the cocaine import agency. You know, I've always...
Oh, my God, that is brilliant. CIA, the Cocaine Import Agency.
Exactly.
I like that.
They're the biggest drug dealers in the country. And drugs, you know, you look at all these big banks that, you know, from the Libor scandal down, Barclays, you name it, all of them busted for money laundering. Well, who's laundering the drug money? The big multinational banks. But nobody goes to jail for that.
Well, and also the major corporations... I think there's a clause in Wall Street. If you've got a company registered on the Wall Street Stock Exchange, you don't have to file transaction receipts if you bring in more than 10 grand at a time, kind of thing.
And apparently Pepsi and Coke, or incidentally Coke, have been doing deals with drug cartels and things like that to launder all their drug money through the stock market for a long, long time. And it's basically drug money is the only thing that is really stopping the U.S. economy from plunging into a black abyss, really. It's the main source of real liquid cash that's being injected into the economy. The rest of it is just TARP bailouts.
Say no to drugs is the big saying here. When our government's been smuggling drugs since Mena, Arkansas, with Bill Clinton, to the Bush family, to the crap that goes on now. But, you know, we live in a world of hypocrisy. Just say no to drugs. But I guarantee you, as most of these school shooters turn out, they're all on pharmaceutical drugs. They're generally on terrible psychotropic drugs that are known to make them suicidal or violent. But, you know, they don't admit it right away. So we're going to have to do the digging, the online digging, to find out the truth of what went on.
Mm-hmm. Allegedly, this week leading up to the shooting, I think 4 days in a row on CNN and NBC and a number of other major networks have been doing specials on controlling assault weapons. And then
right,
suddenly get a justification for all this stuff that they've been feeding people for the week preceding it. You know,
what's interesting is how many of these shooters' fathers are involved in the LIBOR scandal, including this young man. His father is involved in the LIBOR scandal. He was supposed to testify.
James, I don't know what the LIBOR scandal is.
Huh?
I don't know what that is. What's the LIBOR scandal?
It's the labor interest. I forget what all the initials stand for. I covered it today on my news show. But it's basically the big bust in the multinational banks where they just got busted, primarily in the UK, for manipulating interest rates around the world. It's huge. It's a huge scandal. LIBOR. The shooter in Colorado's father was connected to the LIBOR scandal. He was supposed to testify. This kid, Lanza, his father's connected to it. 2 months ago, a nanny supposedly was watching two children in Manhattan who got murdered. Their father was connected to it. So I think these are some sort of hits from the people behind the scenes to tell these people, you're not going to testify because we'll kill your whole family. I don't see them as any better than any other gang or mob. But it's just interesting when you start looking at the similarities that happen all the time with these types of things. And then thanks to the online community, people that are actually awake, they start uncovering more and more and more. Because I don't know about you, but I know my listeners are very astute when it comes to realizing they're being lied to. They know how to dissect the news now. Okay, it did take me 13 years to get them there, but they're there.
It was a very simple trick for me. It's like to figure out what they were lying about, that takes a little bit of time. To figure out that they're lying, that's kind of like just a carte blanche thing. It's like, was it said on the news? Yes. Okay, then it's probably a lie. Did a politician say it? Yes. And it's probably a lie. Did a military official say it? Yes. Then it's probably a lie. Because these people don't get the truth out invariably. I mean, very occasionally. And that person will usually get demonized and attacked or whatever in the media. So you know that person who's being demonized or that group of people who are being attacked or whatever in the media, they're the ones telling the truth, and the media are the ones purporting the lies for the banks, the scumbags that set up the whole thing in the first place.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, to me, I'd say to people now, anything coming out of our government is a lie unless they prove innocence. As far as I'm concerned, everything is a conspiracy unless they can prove different. You know, they want us and say we're all conspiracy theorists. We're not conspiracy theorists. We're conspiracy factualists. There's a difference. And
yeah. People often tell me, Vinny, not everything's a conspiracy. And I go, you're right. Just most things.
Most. 90%. Just 90%. But, you know, when you live in a society, you know, like here, you know, just say no to drugs. And now they want to create, they want to say that toddlers, you know, children who are 1 or 2 years old that have temper tantrums are mentally ill. So they want to put them on prescription drugs. Okay. Now, I'm a mother. I'm a grandmother. I know toddlers throw temper tantrums because that's what they do. It doesn't mean they're mentally unbalanced. But we have so many children on drugs that were never tested for anyone under 18. They were, you know, your brain's not developed till you're 18. And then they wonder why these kids are so psychotic. And let's not leave out the global economy, which I'm sure adds to people's mental stress. Couple it with vaccines, genetically modified food, you know, pollution in the air, pollution in the water. What do they expect is going to be the final product of that kind of accumulation of filth, let alone the filth they take into their mind with all these killing games, you know, computer killing games, movie killings, TV killings. Everything is killing in America. I don't know what it's like in New Zealand. I haven't been.
It's, well, we have American TV. Let me put it like that.
I'm sorry for you there.
Yeah. Well, you know, we don't get so much of the real junk TV because I went over to the States when I was 14, went to Disneyland, Knott's Berry Farm, stuff like that. And you know what I noticed about the real difference? The real difference is that it's so tacky and dumb by comparison. Like you have a look at the difference between the television shows that come out of different countries, and the American version just seems to have been so dumbed down that it's just not funny, these sitcoms. They're just not exciting, these thrillers, that kind of thing, because you see through them like they're a glass window.
Well, they have to dumb it down for the average American now who has an eighth grade education, if that. So, you know, it's got to be where it can just put you in the zone at the end of slaving all day for minimum wage to come home and take a few beers in front of your TV and get hypnotized into slumberland. So the next day you'll get up and say, oh, my life is better than those stupid jerks I saw on TV. So let me just keep going in and punching the clock. It's all designed to mesmerize people.
You know, I've got this. Hold on, Maria. We're coming to break now. It's the mesmerization process is basically it's just brainwashing and indoctrination through a television set. Okay, and people don't realize that mind control is actually addictive. So not only will you keep getting brainwashed, you'll want to be brainwashed even more. The more that you're brainwashed, isn't that interesting? Vicious cycle. We'll be right back after the break with Maria Heller.
People, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone, for the times they are a-changing.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the harmonica special of the Vinnie Eastwood Show right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And in fact, incidentally, speaking of harmonicas, I was just listening to National Radio the other day, and this guy was trying to encourage people to, en masse, you know, get their harmonicas and get them playing and stuff like that. And I was fully encouraging of this because, you know, they're small, they're portable, you can play them in the exercise yard of the FEMA camp. It'd be great, you know, just lift everybody's spirits. My very special guest is Maria Heller. I don't know about you, but I have this kind of fantasy of you know, being taken to a FEMA camp or something like that with the big screen TVs and the popcorn and the Starburst and something like that and the volleyball nets. It'd be great.
Yeah, that's the people that got slaughtered after Katrina, what those FEMA camps were like. Or the illegals, they call them illegals in this country, that also have to sit in those in prisons because it takes so long for them to get processed. It's not so fun. I'd like you to start changing that fantasy. Remember, thoughts have wings, and you don't want to start creating a situation you don't need in your life. Visualize and inside the FEMA camps instead.
I don't know. I always just try to come up with some kind of a positive perspective, no matter how strange it might be, about getting exterminated. You know, I don't want to be killed or see other people slaughtered and taken away in cattle cars and things like that with all these plastic coffins and burial bags or whatever. But the mere fact that I know that these things actually do exist and it's proven and admitted by the establishment, that's a really scary reality. And I attempt to make fun of that reality so that I don't become part of it, part of the fear complex, rather.
You know, they want to create fear. Fear, fear, fear. This is a planet based on fear instead of love. You know, you came back from break with Bob Dylan's song, you know, the times they are a-changing, which, of course, takes me back to the 60s when there was actually a peace movement in this country. Where is the peace movement today? Nowhere. Where are the young people out in the street, you know, the flower children? Nowhere. You know, what do they have to say about these illegal wars that we're involved in and continue to get involved with? Nothing. You know, it's kind of sad that we're still playing the same songs from the 60s because there's very little being done today, you know, 50 years later. You know, what are you kids waiting for? This is your world, you know. I'm on the other end of life, you know. I had a very good life, so I have no problem leaving this planet. But when I look at you young kids and, like, my grandchildren and, like, my own children, it's like, you guys got to pick up the slack because my generation's dying and we're tired of fighting for the same cause, which is really why I continue to do my show. I don't have to do it. I could just sit back and relax like everybody else and play stupid. But what about the next generation? What happens to you guys?
Well, have you ever noticed that every generation gets blamed for the faults of the previous one? And it's like, I've got this idea that the youth have been so separated from the elders and this kind of mentorship that perhaps, did it used to exist where elders would mentor children on kind of a semi-regular basis and children would have many positive role models around them rather than being cooped up in school and things like that with other kids their own age who don't even know anything any more than they do and they just wind up forming into little youth street gangs, tagging and what have you. Did that used to even exist back in the day?
And it wasn't that long ago. I'm still alive to tell you, yes. You know, in my day, I mean, I don't know how old you are. You look like you're in your 20s.
27. But,
huh?
27, going on 28 in a couple of weeks.
When, you know, back when I was in my teenage years, you had mentors, you had heroes, you had real heroes. You didn't have baseball stars that were all drugged out and pumped up. You had decent people that people looked up to. We had the John Lennons. We had the Martin Luther King. We had the Bobby Kennedys. You know, we had the Abby Hoffmans in the street screaming for peace. You know, we had real heroes. But when I look at the trash that's out there and what our children are emulating today, you know, you look at Hollywood, you talked about the scum of the earth before. Well, you can't get more scum of the earth to emulate than what comes out of Hollywood. You know, when I was your age, Elvis was kicked off stage for shaking his pelvis too much. Now you have people actually having a sex act on stage and no one cares and everybody wants to emulate that. You have people worshiping goth, you know, black arts, the occult in music and in movies, a rash of vampire popularity. And this is what you get for mentors. You know, where are the mentors? I'd like to think that I've been a mentor because I'd like to say I lead by example. I never tell people to do something that I'm not willing to do myself. But where are those people for your generation? You know, they're nowhere. And you guys are going to have to become your own mentors. But yes, there was a time. And then you had to be that type of young person that would listen to and benefit from somebody older than you. Elders were treated with respect when I was young. Today, old people like young people are disposable. They just don't care about them. So history continues to repeat itself over and over. But I do feel bad that you guys have no heroes. You truly don't.
Well, new ones are rising up, and especially with this movement. online radio show hosts and online activism. This is now where our new heroes are coming from, because I think people have realized this this lack of transparency, this lack of honor, essentially, among their current leaders, that they want something new, they want something else. And me personally, I mean, I was pretty much without a father for the vast majority of my life. He was either at work or beating me up, or just not there at all after the divorce. And I had to accumulate vast numbers of elder male role models and female role models in order to compensate for that lost time, essentially. And I think because I actively sought out these people who could teach me something I didn't already know, that's how I've managed to grow as a man and understand other people more, because I'm drawing on a much larger pool of knowledge. I'm not just hanging out with somebody who's my age, who's seen more or less the same things that I have, who really can't teach me anything.
I agree, but, you know, most children are not going to do what you do, okay? And you know, the sad thing is, here in America, most fathers are missing. So it's not like it's the rare child who doesn't have a father who could kind of glom on to some other family. They're missing. They're missing in action. And, you know, what are children supposed to do? Children left to their own devices are going to get in trouble. Any parent will tell you that. But, you know, today most kids live in an empty house, even if they have both parents. Their parents are out working two jobs just to make the same money they made in 1963. I mean, that's the facts here in America. So who's taking care of the kids? You know, how did somebody not notice this kid was so crazy he was going to go blow up, you know, 26 people? How did he slip through the cracks, if indeed that story has any truth to it? You know, children need to have mentors. They need to have boundaries. They need to have limits. They need to have rules. And they need to have people that walk the talk. But meanwhile, we have leaders all over the planet that are, like you said, you know, they're low-life, dirty, dealing, double-crossing liars. And what are the children supposed to learn?
I've talked to a number of people who want to be part of the mainstream political establishment, you know, go to the current ruling party's meetings and things like that. And what I noticed about every single one of these people, these kids, is that they're scum, right? And they're just total, mindless, aggressive, repetitious, malicious scum, who have no empathy for other people, essentially, and they want to become the power brokers of our society. It's horrifying.
Well, you know, they're only victims of the programming, and the programming gets installed from birth. You get programmed in your school system, you get programmed by your religion, you get programmed by the people around you, by the TV, by the liars in your government, and people don't realize, you know, it goes back to what we started the show with. They're all in a prison. They just don't see the bars. And they all just march in lockstep like the Nazis did. You know, and they just see power. It's all about power. It's not about love. It's not about compassion. It's about power over others. And they'll do anything to get it.
All right. Well, Maria, thank you very much for joining us today for this hour. If you've got any final words, I mean, we want to plug your website, Maria.net, M-E-R-I-A .net. She has a number of books and copious quantities of archives and things of that nature, and I believe you even do one-on-one consultations as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, just tell your... The only thing I want to say to your audience is stay out of fear. You know, John Lennon said it best, you know, the love you make is the love you take, and, you know, love is the answer. It doesn't matter what the question is. And fear is the opposite of love. So if you're feeling scared, you need to get yourself in check right away.
Yeah. And also, I wanted to add on that fear is something that stops you from thinking. If you're afraid, your thought process and your ability to reason, calculate, things of that nature, if you're very, very afraid, that ability almost disappears. So don't be afraid. Be confident. Be happy and understand that you are incredibly powerful if you decide that you actually want to do something about it. You know what I'm saying? A whole lot of people complain about things, but those people who complain all the time and never do anything accomplish nothing. Those people who complain very little and do a heck of a lot anyway, they're the ones who truly change society. Self. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live from Auckland, New Zealand, the wonderful, fabulous, sunny, slave, South Pacific Island country with plenty of constables and also a very corrupt government. Everybody knows, suddenly knows what I'm talking about. Isn't that a real sad thing, is that no matter which Western country you're talking about, every single one of them has turned into some kind of draconian police state ruled by bankers already? That's really sickening. Quite irritating. Because they've been planning it for quite a long time. And the monkey works, I mean, the monkeys throwing the spanners in the works and what have you, they seem to be working just a little bit better every day. But it doesn't change the fact that we're still living in fracking police states. Sucks. My very special guest is Scott Keisler. Keisler, like a K-E-I-S-L-E-R from scottkeisler.com. That's Scott with two T's. He's an author, a theologian, researcher, journalist, if you will. And he's the author of The Omega Manifesto. Scott, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me, Vinny. It's great to be here.
So, tell us a little bit about... go ahead.
Oh, sure. I mean, as far as who I am and what I do, I mean, I'd say that any given time, I'm someone who wears multiple hats. I do have a degree in journalism, like you mentioned. I used to do a little bit of sports writing, nothing too big there. And I've been writing independently my articles since, I'd say, 2005-ish. And some of my articles have recently appeared on sites like beforeitsnews.com and other venues. So, I mean, I count myself among the new media, to use your term, Vinny. And what that essentially means to me is that rather than trying to project a false reality into the public consciousness on behalf of the state for the purposes of manipulation, deception, and control, I seek to report real news, and I seek to report how the world really works. And I try to hold the proverbial feet of the media, of the state, of the government, to the fire. So, in other words, I try to be a watchdog and not a lapdog. And if that involves doing a little bit of muckraking, you know, so be it.
And this is different from normal journalists ad infinitum. I can't tell you, Scott, how many of these people that I've spoken to, and it's just they're just airheads, really. they're just soulless, unthinking, trash, and I don't know. I used to work with people in business like this. I used to work for people like that, and they don't care about anybody but themselves. So how the heck are they supposed to do a job that's about informing other people about what's a threat to them?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, in the media, you know, people want to talk about liberal bias in the media. And it's not that there isn't a liberal bias and all that kind of thing. But, Vinny, that's old news. I mean, we're talking about state control here in the United States, state control media, essentially. I mean, you can insert parenthetically a special interest, the military-industrial complex, the banksters, but it's state-controlled media, and they're basically using mass mind control techniques. I know how that sounds, but it's true, unfortunately. And so, yeah, the people walk around, to borrow from Alex Jones, like jellyfish, and they're just sort of floating through this false fake reality, and that's the way it is.
And they're also, incidentally, a spineless creature.
Right, yeah, they don't stand for anything. It's relativism. It's, you know, I make up everything as I go along, and, you know, I can't beat the New World Order if I even know about it or believe in it. It's getting more and more difficult to deny. But if I can't beat them, you know, join them, be a part of them, so maybe I can get control and run things.
Yeah. Maybe they'll make you into a nice pet.
Oh, yeah, well, that'd be nice. They can pet me in the concentration camp.
Now, Scott, we've got a little bit of a problem with your audio feed there. You mind clicking off your webcam for a bit? We'll see if that improves it.
Okay, apologies.
Okay, that's not a problem. It happens sometimes. All right, so I got this idea, right, of the new media, as we were talking about. And essentially it's like some people want to hate the current existing media and some people want to co-opt the existing media, you know, by being nice to them and what have you. I'm in favor of both.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you there, co-opt. It would be nice to see. There are a few bright lights out there, not necessarily among the mainstream, but there are people who care about the news, who want to tell you what's really going on, not because they have an agenda that they're trying to push on you, but just simply because, you know, they don't want to join the New World Order. I mean, so yeah, that's the way I look at it.
I look at it like, do I want to be a slave and have somebody else telling me what to do for the rest of my life?
Nah, not so much.
And the problem is, once you have that realization that this is what I don't want, suddenly there's a massive burden of all these things that you have to do in order to ensure that that doesn't happen to you. And because we're all connected and we live in societies that are run by the same people, we understand that it has to also be a kind of a mass consciousness, mass awareness sort of thing. And the only way that ordinary people who want to tell the truth have really gotten access to audiences as of late is through this internet. And you wonder, how much longer is it going to take us before the consciousness is so far shifted from, I know that bad stuff is going on, but I got to pay the mortgage, got to feed the kids, that kind of thing, to I know that bad stuff's going on. Frack the mortgage. Don't worry about the kids because they're going to be either slaves or worse. Anyway, what do I have to do now? I have to drop everything that I ever thought was of any value in my life that was taught to me by the establishment. I've since found out as a lie. So, mate, it's like. Having your high school diploma revoked after you graduated like 10 years ago and then being forced back into high school to relearn how the world really works. It's incredibly frustrating for people. And often there's nothing that motivates them to do that kind of work than to be, well, for lack of a better word, traumatized by the system.
Yeah, I totally agree. And there's also this element of pride that comes into the picture, like, gee, I've been duped all this time. Should I admit that there really is an agenda to set up a global government? Should I really admit that there are FEMA camps out there? Should I really admit all these different things? And to do that, it requires a certain aspect of humility. And a lot of people just aren't humble enough to be able to do that. And so that's one thing. You just have to humble yourself and say, oh my gosh, I was wrong. Let's reset this and start over.
Yeah, my girlfriend was talking about some people that she's had a bit of a problems with, and she says, oh, they're so stupid. They just keep repeating themselves and repeating themselves, and they never admit when they've done something wrong and all of that kind of stuff. And I go, you know, a lot of stupid people don't know how stupid they are, because it takes a smart person to say, you know what, I feel really stupid right about now, and I don't know anything.
Yeah, the way C.S. Lewis put it, you know, the more you know, the more you realize you don't know much at all. And the inverse of that is unfortunately true. Like you were saying, ignorant people don't know that they're ignorant. And I have a saying, it goes like, there's a difference between ignorance and stupidity, but willful ignorance is a form of stupidity.
How much of that do you see in the areas that you cover? So let's talk about the Omega Manifesto. What is it, and explain it a little bit.
Oh, sure. I mean, if my book were a film, the tagline would have to be Shattering the False Reality Matrix in Which Most People Live. And I alluded to it when I was talking about the new media versus the lamestream / dinosaur horror media, because that's what they do. They sell out their bodies, I guess, for a little bit of cash and control and influence. There's these people, they're pushing their philosophical system on us. And I look at my book, the Omega Manifesto. It's an ebook. You can get it on for your Kindle at Amazon, or your Nook at Barnes & Noble, and various other sites like that. But the way I look at it is that, I'm trying to
bring up something there.
No, I just, I lost my train of thought, to be honest with you.
Don't worry, it happens on this show, especially with me. Let's talk about manifestos for a second, because there's only two manifestos that I know of currently until you've brought up this one. The Communist Manifesto by Karl Marx is a 33rd degree Freemason, who in every single photo you see of him, he's got his hand inside his coat pocket, like it's the hidden hand, same as Napoleon. And the Resistance Manifesto by Mark Dice, which became a bestseller, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that's what it was. My book I look at as a systematic anecdote to the philosophical system that's being pushed upon us, this collectivist supposedly utopia where warmongers are called humanitarians, where you call lies and manipulation truth and these types of things. And the media is just one aspect of it. You have what I would call weaponized pop culture, from film to music to fashion.
To food.
Yeah. yeah. GMO food. And I laugh, but it's not funny. And in our water, I've got Ice Mountain here. Who knows what's in that stuff? It's just everything is being used to control, to manipulate, to dominate, to dumb us down. That book by Charlotte Iserby, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, we're watching that happen. And so you weaponize culture, pop culture, and this is relevant today because you have the... I heard it on the first hour. Your first guest talked about how Newtown, Connecticut, the Hunger Games author, is allegedly... Yeah. I don't know if she lives there currently or at one point did, but... And that's just the one thing, and there's the still of from the Dark Knight, I think it was, where it says Sandy Hook on the map, and this is predictive programming, and these people like George Lucas, they know how to come at you sideways rather than head on, you know, and they insert their agenda into the entertainment because they know your defenses are down, and they know how to put together emotional sequences in a specific way to further manipulate you so that you basically unconsciously will emulate what you see. And who knows what happened with the Sandy Hook deal, but it certainly wouldn't surprise me if it was a mind control person or something of that nature.
Yeah. Well, it happens all the time. And I don't know about you, but every single time I see somebody say the words safe and effective or security, it scares the living freaking, feces out of me, because you understand that every single thing that these people say, if it sounds like a good word, you've got to be really, really conscious of it. That they're using it in the direct opposite way for which it was intended. So basically, when they say security, what they mean is they want you to feel insecure. If they say safe, they mean dangerous. If they say effective, they mean effective at exterminating your ass.
Yeah, yeah. Black is white. White is black. And you were talking about it again on the first hour, this fear, and fear is one of the best ways to control people. And unfortunately, so many people are just going through their lives. They're running on the treadmill so fast just to break even that, you know, they come home from work, they're tired, they don't want to deal with these heavier questions of life, of a coming dictatorship that's forming here in our country. And on the one hand, you feel for them. I know how that is to work that hard and just to try and keep up. But at some point, you know, we have to take the bull by the horns and say, look, this can't happen. We've got to step in and do something about this situation.
Yeah. Well, it seems to be out of a lack of choice or a lack of positive options and what have you. And negative reinforcement and positive reinforcement. So negative reinforcement is pay this fine. No, I don't want to pay this fine. Okay, I'll arrest you and I'll put you in a jail. Okay, well, I guess I'll pay the fine. Positive reinforcement is pay this fine. Really? Are there any laws there? No, there aren't actually any laws. You have to completely admit that this is legal and submit to it. Otherwise, I just have to let you go because what I'm doing is a crime. Oh, okay. Well, no thanks. And then go, okay, have a good day. No, that's positive. And wouldn't it be great if cops would just stop being criminals and maybe explain the crimes that they're committing while they're committing them to you and then just let you go because they know that what they're doing is wrong, you know, if they had some kind of a conscience, but they don't, you know, and they get recruited specifically for this reason, you know, that all of these sectors, you know, you have a look at the media, you have a look at the massive industries and the Wall Street and the police and the military and all of these kind of things. It's kind of like a massive meat grinder. Everybody kind of goes in there, but meat just comes out the other end. And even a friend of mine in Australia, and this is true in the United States and as well as New Zealand, took a policeman's exam once, and he came back as having, quote, too high a result to be in the police. As in, he was too smart to be a police officer. They said, I'm sorry, this is not the right profession to you. You'll get bored and go out of your mind being a police officer. I was just thinking like that, man, there is an upper limit to intelligence of the people who enforce the BS laws on us. Isn't that interesting? I wonder who benefits from that. Certainly ain't the people who know that the laws aren't laws. We'll be right back with Scott Cover.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live in operatic persuasion from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, where we managed to get a whole lot of mafioso criminals to supply us with our olive oil and Cuban cigars to the parliamentary system. My very special guest today is Scott Kiesler from scottkiesler.com. Welcome back, sir.
Thanks. Thanks again, Vinny. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, no. Is there anything? Look, it's 2012, very, very end of 2012. It's been a well fracked up year as far as I've been concerned. You know, my 2012, what was it? New Year's Eve resolution was 2012. Time to stop fracking around. Sure enough, I've stopped fracking around. I started doing a heck of a lot more, grown the audience, gotten really big guests on the show, talked about some really important stuff. It's been a good year. But there's been a hell of a lot of really bad things that have happened that have made this such a good year, because we've had a whole lot of interesting content to cover. So what's actually on your mind in terms of recent memory or even best thing from the year, maybe?
Best thing from the year? Well, it was great definitely to get my book out there, the Omega Manifesto. And I wrote that book just out of a need, as we've been talking about. Really, the first thing was just to get the information out there. It's not so much about, you know, writing the book or, you know, being a big author or whatever. It's just information I felt people need to know. And I start from the beginning. I start with classical Western culture, which, you know, believed in a little something called absolute objective truth, which is something that's gone by the wayside. And I follow that thread. I've always been a big reader of people like Francis Schaeffer and C.S. Lewis. And so the first chapter in the book, I'll be honest with you, it's not a lowest common denominator chapter. It's I've had some feedback on it, and it can be a little challenging, especially for people who haven't been through that type of material before. I get into the Hegelian dialectic, and I get into existentialism and Kierkegaard and things like that. So it can be a little challenging, but I intentionally put it in the book because it's so foundational that people realize that we need to face the fact that we need to decide whether or not objective absolute truth exists out there, you know? And so I included that in the book, and then I go on from there, and I look at things like transhumanism. I look at eugenics and how actually transhumanism is an extension and a continuation and a repackaging of eugenics and Darwin and Galton and that crowd. And part of the book, I mean, it reads like an intelligence briefing in some places. It's got a historical bent, and I think people will enjoy it. And it's got a style that's engaging and fun. But I also think that there are nuggets along the way, and it's not just random nuggets, you know, like fun facts. It's I'm tying concepts together. I'm trying to paint a broad picture in a systematic way to where the dots are connecting, and you begin to step back and say, oh, okay, I see what's happening here.
So when you do see what's happening, what do you do about it? Because it's all very well to gain knowledge, and I must admit that I spent like, I don't know, near on 18 months absorbing documentaries, listening to radio shows and things like that before I decided to get off my own ass and do something.
Yeah, and it's a good question. And the thing is, a lot of people want to sit around and basically complain and moan on internet message boards and be trolls and know-it-alls. And sorry to be crude, but that's just the way it is. But you got to be out there and be politically active. You got to go out there and tell people and not present your ideas in a way that's like, oh, well, gee, I know how weird and strange it sounds, and I know I sound out there. No, you got to be confident that you know what you're talking about. And, you know, I've got the documentation. I can give you documentation until you're blue in the face. At some point, you're going to have to make a decision whether or not you want to accept what I'm saying. And so it's a matter of being confrontational, but not in like a disrespectful way. You can't be
kind of like how a teacher tells the class to quiet down because they're about to teach them a very important lesson.
Right, exactly. And your motivation isn't like, oh, gee, I know more than you, ha ha. Your motivation is I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to come alongside you and say, this unfortunately is how the world really works. And the sooner we wise up to that fact, the sooner we're going to be able to counteract it and to engage reality as it really is. That's the first step right there, finding out what reality is and then going from there. And so many people just want to make up their reality, and especially the people, the elites that run everything from the media to entertainment, to geopolitics and like the economy, all that garbage is, it's a sham. I mean, I was listening to Romney and Obama debate the economy, I just wanted to pull my hair out. It's like they're debating this fake reality that doesn't even exist, as if, you know, Wall Street is capitalist. No, Wall Street, it's a bunch of crony insiders, good old boy network. Nazi comes from the word for national socialism. It's fascism, big government in bed with big business. But the establishment Republicans in our country, they want to sit around and defend Wall Street at all costs because they think it represents capitalism. Well, no, that's not the case. But the liberals, I mean, they're no better. And by the way, I don't play the left-right game. I don't identify myself as a Republican or a Democrat. But the left in this country, we'll just say it that way. The left in this country, as a rule, obviously not everyone, but as a rule, they're economically and financially illiterate. And so when they bemoan or decry Wall Street as a bunch of capitalists gone wild, they don't know what they're talking about. It's fascism sitting on top of socialism. And it goes back to the Federal Reserve, which is the part of the equation that never gets mentioned.
Have you ever feared that one day you might get the cops called to your house on a domestic call because you've been yelling too much at the presidential debates on TV?
Yeah, it was ridiculous. Some of the crap I heard, sorry, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you watch the third party debate, and yeah, you're yelling just as loud, but it's yelling positively, like, "Yes, finally an actual debate! Oh my God, let me bask in the actual democratic process!"
I did watch the
sunshine.
I did watch the last third party debate, and you're absolutely right. They were actually debating based on reality. I mean, there were two or three candidates that, quite frankly, I didn't really agree with a lot of what they were saying, but they were debating reality and not this fake garbage plastic package world that the presidential debates were getting into.
And you know what? I'd probably crown that debate as one of the highlights. I mean, historically speaking, from the United States, that debate is the first one ever to be organized.
Yeah, it was fun to watch, and I saw the one with Larry King as the moderator. So that's always nice to have someone like that participating. Not that, you know, we need that kind of notoriety for credibility, but it's just nice because, you know, some people will just say, "Oh, Larry King," and tune in just to see what Larry King's up to. So we'll take it.
Yeah, you're going to take what you can. I don't know about you, but when you think about life as a journalist or somebody who's trying to get the truth out there and what have you, you kind of realize that, hey, those people who have the real expensive camera crews and stuff like that, with these massive cameras and these real pumped up microphones and with the little labels and stuff all professionally made and stuck to them, they're not the ones that are actually real journalists. I mean, if you've ever been to a stage play where you see the actors play different roles, or like in a Monty Python skit or something of that nature, that's all that I see when I look at these people. They're simply clowns that are dressing up in a different type of clown outfit, and they're still just there to entertain you.
Yeah, exactly. And you put somebody in a $25 million set, you give them all the techniques on how to sound authoritative and all that stuff, and you put him on national TV, boom, he speaks, it must be true. But unfortunately, that's not how it works at all. You have people behind the scenes paying for them to produce fake news in some instances. People engaging in goonery and scumbaggery to get certain things not said, not covered, left alone. Or if it does come out to, you know, ridicule, oh, look at that tinfoil hat-wearing terrorist, you know, that kind of thing.
And chuck a couple of labels on them, you know, nobody will know the difference.
Yeah, ad hominem, no big deal. Mm. And, you know, people think of mind control as, you know, you wave a little pocket watch in front of someone's eyes and you snap their fingers and, ha-ha, look at them running
You're
around.
You're feeling dumbed down. Very dumbed down.
Yeah, you're dumbed down and you grunt like a chimpanzee, and that's mind control. But no, it's more subtle than that. It's what the way I look at it is this. Mind control is you take reality, you stuff it in this little tiny itty-bitty box, and you tell people that that is the totality of all the reality that exists. So you can control a debate, and you can use techniques like, omission. You make fun of people, you deceive, and you limit reality and you prevent people from ever getting outside of that little tiny itty-bitty box. You use peer pressure, appeal to authority, and these types of things. And as I was saying, anybody that bucks the system and wanders off the false reality plantation, you just make fun of them. You attack their character, not the content of what they're saying. But you find some garbage on them, you go with that, and hey, turn on American Idol or Monday Night Football, and that's that.
Yeah, it's really foolish. I remember Edward Griffin on the show once, and I asked him, was there something funny that you've ever seen before? And he's like, what's hilarious? And he goes, you had to think about it for a while. He comes up with this. They were doing these aluminium tests on Mount Shasta, and it turned out to be like about 30,000 times the regular aluminium in the snow melt kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And one of these doctors, wear a white lab suit. He says, "Oh, you idiot! It's aluminium from the skis. Don't you know that there's people skiing on that mountain?" But that wasn't the funniest part. The funniest part was this was not a skiing mountain. There was no ski fields on it. People don't even hike up it for large months out of the year and stuff like that. It's too rocky. So this is first random crazy thing that comes to their head to explain away. I had this journalist come in to me and tell me, "Oh, they could never keep chemtrails a secret. I don't believe it." And he's like, "There must be at least 5,000 people involved." And I say, "Well, hold on a second. Where'd you get the number 5,000? Oh, I made it up. So let me get this straight. You're claiming I made something up. And your argument against me making something up, is for you to make something up about what I made up. Do you think reality gets lost in the process here?"
Yeah, Vinny, I think it might. And, you put a white lab coat on someone and all of a sudden they're infallible, I guess. But yeah, that's ridiculous. the skis on a non-skiing mountain. But unfortunately, that's the way it goes. I mean, people... just in a relativist, collectivist world where, black is white and white is black and we're both right and we can hug and all of that, you can make it up as you go along. You can change the rules as you go, and it's okay because, in the dialectic, that's the nature of the beast. It's a pitching deck. You can't ever pin the jello to the wall, so to speak. And you just slime your way out of anything.
Well, it's a good place to be, essentially. Imagine, just for a moment, ladies and gentlemen, if I gave you $5,000 and I said you have one night to spend this $5,000 and I want you to get as debaucherous and go as crazy as you want, you'd get up to a lot of debauchery and craziness. And then the next night, imagine I say, okay, now you've got $5 billion. Can you imagine the personal wealth of some of these sociopathic criminal scum up the top, what they could do? Just even the possibility of what they could do if they chose to. Any level of debauchery is affordable to them. It doesn't matter whether they want to kidnap 1,000 children or whatever, they can do it. Yep. Have them delivered in a hazmat truck or something like that.
Yeah, the debris of destruction behind such a scenario, and that you're right, the elites essentially have unlimited resources, and so the wake of destruction behind where they've been is just absolutely
just as unlimited.
Exactly.
Unlimited resources means unlimited scumbaggery. Okay? It's a tale as old as time. Wherever there is huge concentrations of power and resources, there is associated scumbaggery. My very special guest, Scott Kiesler, and I will be right back. ScottKiesler.com. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Just want to do a quick few fundamental sponsor blurbs here. Buy Emergency Foods. You can click on the banners at the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. My good friend Charlie McGrath hooked me up with those guys, and they gave me a little bit of cash for those banners when I was desperately, desperately needing it. And I'm not sure how much returns they've got for them, but what I thought was really interesting about Charlie is that he's kind of like the conspiracy theorist on the go or whatever. He's got his little packs of emergency food on him at his office and that kind of thing. And every now and again, when he can't be bothered, cooking up a proper meal or whatever, or it's too expensive to go and eat out, he just cracks open one of these little emergency meals and he's like, "Hey, it's not that bad. It's actually pretty decent, you know, and it was a hell of a lot cheaper than all the rest of the food that you can get in the United States at the moment." So buy emergencyfoods.com, banners at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and guerrillamedia.co.nz, as well as stem cell nutrition. My good friend Grant managed to reverse a whole lot of really negative health effects. His vision was bad, that came right. He was really overweight, that started to come right. His libido was real low, that started to come right. So if you're getting a bit long in the tooth and your body's not what it used to be, and it's starting to make you feel depressed or unhappy or incapacitated in some way, there's a little stem cell nutrition link there on the homepage of the VinnyEastwoodShow.com that you can click on and call Grant, and he can sort you out with some stuff there. Okay, and lastly, the Vinny Eastwood financial crisis, having a little bit of a financial crisis at home, girlfriend's car's broken down, the whole lot of stuff that needs to be fixed on that at Christmas time. So I need about a grand, really, about 1,000 New Zealand dollars. I think that's somewhere around 800 US dollars as well, just to kind of make it through the Christmas season and the earlier half of January as well. So if you are capable of donating or subscribing for $5, $10 or $20 a month, please go to the homepage of the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, Vinny with a Y and Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news. So please donate today. And we'll make sure that we keep on getting all these fracking ridiculously awesome shows out there to you. I'm doing it on the webcam, getting all these great guests all over the place. So I hope you really, really enjoy it. And I hope you're as generous with me as I have been with the audience for these couple of years that we've been doing this show, as well as all the YouTube videos going out and basically adding to the protests that happened here in New Zealand. All right, now that that's finished with, back to my very special guest, Scott Kiesler. Scott, we've only got a few minutes left. So I was wondering, as a journalist, there's certain things that you don't talk about a lot of the time. Like, for example, you know how journalists don't release their sources or they don't make claims that they can't back up or whatever? But they do have their own thoughts and opinions and things like that. And just for the sake of flippancy, occasionally add them into the conversation. But they usually don't come up, and often you do bite your tongue about things. So I was wondering, is there anything like that that you could really conceive of, or you just call it as you see it?
Well, a journalist is just one of the hats that I wear, and at some point, somebody's opinion, whether you're consciously aware of it or not, is going to influence how you think and what you do. Within a year of me. I was within a year of finishing my journalism degree when I had what I would call a Damascus Roads conversion experience. I became a Christian and a follower of Jesus Christ. And so within a year of that, I was in seminary getting my master's in theology. And to answer your question, I weave a spiritual thread through everything that I do as well. So that's another one of the hats that I wear. And in my book, The Omega Manifesto, which you can get more information about on scottkiesler.com, that's S-C-O-T TTKEISLER.com. Just think of it like I before E, except after Kiesler. But I get into spirituality and questions of faith. And I think I talk a little bit about 2012. Allegedly, the world's going to end here on Friday. So, I'm being facetious. But I do take on that subject as well. And so, yeah, I definitely am big on, you know, not speculating too much and documentation. But at the same time, I work my opinion into matters as well, like educated guest type of a thing. So I don't know if that answers the question that you were asking.
Well, I mean, giving out specific examples, because the Omega Manifesto seemed religious to me, because I was like the Alpha and Omega, and right now I'm what am I doing?
I'm speaking through the Alpha and Omega phone.
That's amazing. I need an Omega phone myself. Maybe I should rename my website omegaphone.com. That'd be awesome.
Or the Alpha and Omegaphone.com.
And so I do get into Bible prophecy and that sort of thing, not necessarily from a doom and gloom point of view, but actually while I was in seminary, I've got the book right here. I met Gary Call, his book, En Route to Global Occupation. I don't know if you're familiar with that work. I know a lot of people in your listening audience have probably read that. And Gary's other book, it's called, I forgot the webcam's off, but it's called The New World Religion. And Gary comes at it from a Christian point of view, but that book, I would say, was the thing that got me going down the trail of researching the New World Order in the first place. And so my book has, it's a hodgepodge. It has a little bit of everything. It does have, I talk about prophecy. I talk about philosophy. I talk about the New World Order, which I believe is Luciferian at the very top. And at the very end, it's, I don't want to give away the ending, but it gets what some people would call pretty out there. I mean, I get into UFOs and things of that nature, which my book, to put it simply, my book, I would say, is an equal opportunity offender. There are going to be libertarians that aren't going to like some of the stuff that I say. There are going to be evangelicals who are going to take exception to some of the stuff that's in a book. And I don't do that to be divisive or to irritate, but I do that just because I'm trying to put down in book form what I believe to be true. Ultimately, to me, that's more important than anything else. And so that's... in the Omega Manifesto, it is a manifesto. I tried to put the whole package together from beginning to end in an orderly way. And it's kind of, there are two threads that weave through the book. There's the Luciferian sort of occult agenda. And then I offer what I would call the remedy or the countermeasure to what's being foisted by the people at the top of the pyramid.
I've always found that if you've got any two big groups of people, there's two schools of thought, you know, like it's left paradigm, right paradigm. If you come out and you tell the truth, what you're likely to do is offend both sides, because the only way an argument that big can last so long without one side being declared the clear winner or the clear loser, it means that both of them must be wrong. Because if one of them was actually right, the argument would be over pretty quickly, I think.
Yeah. And along those same lines, you have this ideal of pluralism, that all the religions are right and multiple paths to God. But the way I look at it is it's more likely that they're all wrong than that they're all right. It just doesn't make sense that they would all be right because, I mean, Buddhism came out of Hinduism. So in other words, Buddhism, in a sense, is a rejection of some of the core tenets of Hinduism. And, of course, you have Islam, which says, hey, wait, the Christians and the Jews both got it wrong. So the point being is that it's more likely that everybody's wrong than everybody's right.
Well, I don't know about you, but when people talk about political correctness. You know, we're not supposed to have conversations like these where we talk about other people's, what was it? Like, it's the hairdresser code, I think it is. You're not supposed to talk about religion or politics, or I think there might be something else important in there or whatever, but they avoid all these really important issues for fear that they'll offend people. And you know what I was thinking about this? If what you're going to say is not meant to offend somebody, like if you're not directly insulting somebody but they get offended, they're the one that is creating the offense, really. And they're doing it in their own head in a defensive way. So what is it they're trying to protect? You know, they're trying to say, like, look, I've done all these studies. I've got these various letters before and after my name. I've worked for such and such an agency. I know everything that's going on, and anything that comes out aside of that knowledge base that I have is crackpot, crazy conspiracy theorist. I'm the only person who knows anything that matters.
Yeah, exactly. And I talk about that in my book about how people tend to, you know, they do their research for a while. They come to certain conclusions. Hopefully they've done good research, but whether or not it's good or bad, for the sake of what we're talking about, really doesn't matter. When they come to their conclusions, at some point they start to construct a wall or a bubble around themselves, and anything that comes and sort of imposes on that wall or comes inside the bubble, oh, got to get rid of that. We got to get that outside of the bubble because that's not reality according to the way I see it. And we've got to be careful about building these bubbles around ourselves and rejecting anything and everything that comes in that doesn't line up exactly perfectly with what the way we think things are right now.
Yeah. Otherwise, your bubble might get pierced by a bayonet of a police state agent of some description. Scott Kiesler has been my guest. Thank you very much, Scott, for coming on. Website, Scott Kiesler, ScottKiesler.com. His ebook, Omega Manifesto, is up there for you to peruse and download if you wish. Scott, thank you very much, man.
Thank you.
All right. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you again sometime.